Okay, so starting the planning commission meeting for Thursday, January 23rd, 7:36 is the time. And present we have Vince Foy, Judy Corso, Allison Lowe, Allison Despathy, and Greg Pryor. And for planning commission members right now, we have Judy Corso, Vince Foy, and Allison Despathy. Okay, so thank you guys all for being here. And I just wanted to get going into the agenda to start to take a peek. Are there any changes that you guys see?
No.
Adjustments? Pretty straightforward?
Uh-huh.
We're all in consensus?
Good.
Okay. Okay, so that's that. And then the minutes. So the December minutes, I know that's been quite a bit of time now. But if you guys had a chance to take a peek, or if not, if you could, we did go through quite a bit last time, so I just tried to summarize the key things.
Looked fine to me.
You had a moment to go through it? Perfect. Okay. So just give
there
you some time.
Detailed minutes.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
It's actually like summarized in many places because we had some good conversation going.
Mm-hmm. Seems fine.
All good to go?
Yeah, I move that we accept the minutes.
Okay. All right, that sounds good. So we're all in consensus there. Okay, so those December meeting minutes are accepted. And then public comment. Greg, you're here. It's great to see you. Anything you had to...
Thank you, Greg.
Okay, good. And thanks for taking the time to be here. And then the big thing that we wanted to get to, that I'd put out there to you all, obviously, is having Allison Lowe, who wears several hats for the town, but much appreciated. So select board, also on the regional planning commission. And what is your position there? Is it just member of the regional planning commission?
I work there.
Yeah.
I'm a senior planner. I've been there since 2003.
Okay.
So I'm really senior.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of our region, we serve 50 municipalities, mm-hmm. and we have a staff of generally like 10 people. So for the most part, we're all generalists.
Okay.
We don't have division of labor that you might see in like Chittenden County.
You all sort of jump in as needed.
We try to jump in as needed, so that can be a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, we're flexible, but it means... You know, we try to be a jack of all trades, and then it means we're often specialists.
Right, gotcha. Well, definitely. So those are the two positions, and that's where I had asked you even at the end of last year, just with regards to talking about the maps, which aren't ready. So I just wanted to sort of put out there, I think, the goals, and I think you're clear on it. But Act 181 and Tier B status, Tier 1B status. Mm-hmm. And any Act 250 exemptions related to that, just any guidance around that piece. And then also with the wastewater treatment facility, obviously as the select board, you guys are going through and trying to figure out best action. Mm-hmm. And obviously I know this meeting isn't about going through all the details because we can attend. Sounded like Glenn said, obviously, we can attend when that information comes through. Because will there be a presentation on it?
There was already a presentation
on the 60.
It was on the 90%.
Okay,
but you know, I think that we might have to get the word out more. I mean, so
I also Glenn had mentioned that.
I also think that there's a need. I think there's a need for more information, but also I think that there are some important decisions that will have to be made. So. Is it helpful if I provide like a snapshot level of Act 181, where we are, and then talk about the role of Danville's wastewater system in relation to Act 1? Because they are connected.
Very much so. That's perfect.
Thank you. And then we'll talk about the things that we know about the wastewater.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that we might need to know are the decisions that might.
And the other thing I think that had come up that we were wondering about was sort of the management. It seems like there's a little bit of a diverse who's managing doing what in the wastewater treatment facility. So once we get there, it sounded like there were maybe three main players involved for billing, management, and...
Well, we work with H2O, and they manage it on a day-to-day. day basis. Okay. After Stubb retired, they came in. And so there was a transfer of institutional knowledge.
Okay.
It appears to have gone fairly smooth. There was, I guess, an incident where during a very low water period, when the river wasn't drawn down, so it exceeded certain levels. And that's documented in the plan. Okay. But I think that's...
Okay. So I might have some questions around that once we get to it, but it sounded like the place to start was Act 181, so thank you.
So... Act 181 is a massive change to Act 2, basically. And at the core of it, there are some temporary exemptions to Act 250 thresholds. And those exemptions take place right now in designated downtowns or neighborhood development areas or areas that have... in designated village centers with permanent zoning and subdivision regulations that are served by sewer. So in order, you have to have all of those things in place to have a designated downtown, so they're automatic. So there are thresholds. Those thresholds are basically forgiven for certain housing projects. St. Johnsbury has an exemption to Act 250 regulation for housing projects in the village center and in the neighborhood. And those exemptions will sunset 2027. It's really important to them because their housing development on the Big Hole on Main Street otherwise would not have been exempt from Act 250. So they actually saw some housing projects go forward.
Are they a 1A? Did they get the 1A status?
Nobody has gotten that status yet. Those are just temporary provisions that will sunset. Those exemptions will sunset in 2027. Concurrent to that, all of the regional planning commissions are scrambling to come up with consistent future land use maps. And they have certain categories. All of the categories need to be the same and even color-coded the same. So we have downtowns and village, centers of development. We have transition areas. We have enterprise areas that we have business parks. Transition areas are areas that could take a higher density or a more vibrant mix of commercial residential uses. Then we have multiple categories of rural lands. We have rural agriculture and forestry. Those are the lands that were actively used as working lands. Then we also have rural conservation lands, and those could have very sensitive features to them, like headwaters, high elevations. I think we're going to go for 2,000 feet as opposed to 2,500 feet for conservation. This is rural conservation lands, and it was a
right,
category.
Right, but 2,000 versus 2,500.
Elevation. Feet in elevation. Sorry.
And I should ask, just, I don't know, are you talking about like the critical resource area part?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just don't know, I don't know if you guys had the background on that, that might help. Part of Act 181 specifically said that in a few years down the road, or they're going to be working on critical resource areas throughout the state that will have more protections. And there was definitely some debate.
But there are two different things.
Yeah.
So, our rural conservation lands are not necessarily going to be what they're calling the tier three lands.
Okay, so
that's a separate rulemaking process.
Yep.
It's very possible that those lands will overlap,
mm-hmm.
at least to a certain degree.
Right.
But that's not in our wheelhouse, and that's the responsibility of this newly created board called the Land Use Review Board.
Right.
And the Land Use Review Board is going to have to review our future land use maps.
Is that a state-level board?
And it just was assigned.
Yeah. Kirsten Salton from our region was named to it.
Okay.
Couple of other people that I know.
So Alex, you weren't talking. That's what I wanted to clarify.
Right, it's
so
not.
You were talking more about the Planning Commission, the Regional Planning Commission's work on these conservation zones.
Yeah, okay. they're called rural conservation lands, and they're areas that require additional considerations. Mm-hmm. And we're still grappling with the guidance on that. We meet every week,
mm-hmm.
and then all of the regional planning commissions meet every week mm-hmm. to try to interpret the guidance that continues to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
The balance of lands, I think, are likely to fall that are not in centers of development or not in enterprise zones or recreation enterprise or recreation resource areas like Park Mountain, the outdoor center.
Mm-hmm.
I think the balance of lands are likely to fall under rural gem. And that's characterized by low.
So I'm sorry, I'm totally lost. What you're talking about now is what this board, that we on the local and
what
regional
I'm talking,
level
yeah.
need to prepare maps that have meet their criteria.
Okay, yeah. And I apologize because I thought I was going to spend more time talking. Wastewater.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Otherwise, I would have.
And we can have you come back on that too.
And we're doing a session on February 11th, a webinar
mm-hmm.
On Act 181.
The
region and
the change.
Yes.
NDBA. Okay.
For the whole region.
And we can definitely have you come back on mm-hmm. that piece if you want to just devote this. I'm going to leave that up to you.
Yeah.
It'd
and
be
I
good
think,
for us to
I think it would be better if we actually started looking at your maps and have them out.
Mm-hmm.
And we can, you know, get your input on it. Because it's certainly, it's not something that we want to do to the towns. We want to do it with you.
Yeah.
So the upshot of this is that once we have all of our, you know, our regional future land use map done and approved, and that is assuming that we will have vetted this with all of our communities, then subsequent updates to local plans will have to be consistent
mm-hmm.
with those future land use maps. And this is a major change.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
And will that include some of the floodplain map that you guys are looking at too, or is that sort of a side project?
The flood maps that we're still waiting on from FEMA,
mm-hmm.
which have been delayed, there are areas where of certain land use categories where we're going to subtract mapped floodplain areas and mapped river corridors.
Mm-hmm.
The mapped special flood areas, the special flood hazard areas, the areas that were marked by inundation, those are the ones that FEMA has mapped. Whatever they are and wherever they are at any given time,
mm-hmm.
we'll just have to, right now we're just using the existing layers, roughly digitized. And we are taking that into consideration. But for centers of development where development already exists,
mm-hmm.
we're not taking those out. What's built is already there.
Mm-hmm.
We are taking them out of transition areas and enterprise areas if development hasn't happened,
mm-hmm.
right? Because but we're not trying to undo existing development.
It's already there.
Right? Yeah. Right. So on a side note, the FEMA maps have been delayed again.
Okay.
So part of it was that following the July 2023 floods, the feedback that he got was your maps are off.
So they're reconsidering.
They're reconsidering, recalibrating. We don't have new deadlines. That said, I still think it makes sense to look at your floodplain regulations. And it, you know, it's, it is, in effect an insurance program.
Right.
And it's really not focused on resilience and the proposed changes that came out of the DEC were more focused on resilience. But anyway, that right. rabbit hole is very different.
Right.
But it's an important one.
It is an important
it
one.
It is an important one.
So essentially we're talking about two things here. We've got the FEMA floodplain map piece, which is on hold. We just don't know. And then we've got what the Regional Planning Commission is working on and is kind of messy right now, and you're looking for guidance but working on it. And you'll be contacting us and working with the towns and specifically the planning commissions as you kind of seek to work with the 50 communities.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the February date that you had said, that was February 11th.
February 11th.
And that's a webinar.
It's a webinar. I can't remember if it's at 5:30 or 6 o'clock.
I can look that up.
But I will follow up tomorrow, with an email.
Okay. That would be awesome. Thank you.
But anyways, hopefully that will provide more clarity on how Act 181 will change regional plans. And then, of course, it will change the nature of local plans because ultimately your local plans will have to be consistent with ours. The reason that we're mapping the centers of development the way we are is that we're also mapping areas that could be eligible for what they call Tier 1A and Tier 1B status.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask about that.
We don't determine who actually gets that status, but we map those areas that could be eligible. And then once that map is approved, communities that want to seek that status can.
What does that mean?
It means Act 250 exemptions. In most cases, it would make the temporary Act 250 exemptions that are in place now permanent.
For housing, et cetera, obviously. And a lot of that was what you were saying, depending upon if there's adequate sewage capacity, if there's good zoning bylaws, all of those pieces where they say, okay, your town's sort of set and you guys are good to go.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So what you'd be looking at, if you wanted to seek Tier 1B status, would be for Danville Village. And because it's a designated village center, you have permanent zoning regulations and you have sewer and water capacity. What you don't currently have are permanent subdivision regulations.
Distinct from the zoning.
Yeah.
So that's 1A versus 1B.
No, that's 1A are like the designated downtowns mm-hmm. that have like a community reinvestment
okay,
agreement
that was the 1A
and capacity. So that would be like Newport City.
Got it.
And St. Johnsbury.
Mm-hmm. City centers.
Mm-hmm. Basically your urban centers. Mm-hmm. But if you did want to seek Tier 1B status, it could be in your reach if you wanted to adopt subdivision regulations.
So that's the one piece that Danville does not have
right.
to align with that.
Right.
Yeah.
But the subdivision regulations only need to apply to the village center?
No, townwide.
Townwide, okay.
It's very, you know what, it's very similar, like before Act 181, if a community had permanent zoning and permanent subdivision regulations, they could up their threshold for Act 250 jurisdiction. If they asked for it, mm-hmm. they could go from being what they called a 1-acre town to a 10-acre town. So it's a very similar kind of construct. What hasn't factored in there before is the water and sewer capacity, right? I have heard rumblings in the legislature that the requirement for permanent subdivision regs might go away in the future.
What would they look like? I mean, what's a permanent subdivision regulation
well,
in a town like this?
Right. So in most communities, when somebody applies for a permit to subdivide land, they just go to a development review board or a zoning board of adjustment, and they say, I want to divide this. And they say, well, let's review it under site plan review. And they say, yeah, this looks okay. You know, it's here it is. If you have subdivision regs, it's a little more intensive process. It can be. If it's a major subdivision, for example, you're going to probably want to see a preliminary site plan that shows layout of streets and stormwater facilities. Also, you might want to see other utilities. Maybe you want to see that, you know, power lines, if they're going in, or buried. Or also, there are requirements for the protection of natural resources in sensitive areas, or other historic scenic areas that are important to the community. And also, there are requirements for just how the plats are, how the applications are presented and reviewed, and how the plats are recorded in your town records.
So a lot of that is already covered really under zoning. Just a minute. I mean, to one degree or another.
To one degree or another.
Not as formal, you know. So really, it's, are you, you're creating a few more hoops to jump through.
And calling it that.
But, I mean, already they, for example, there has to be a survey plat. There has to be an indication of roads. There has to be, you know, all those things already have to be done.
Yeah. It probably is. I think the requirement for standards for protection of resources.
That would be different.
I think that's where it gets really important.
Yeah, it gets more complicated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
but by subdivision, you mean like a plan, like a bit, not just people subdividing a lot off of an existing bigger lot. You're talking about kind of
housing,
like a whole
development.
A housing development.
Right. So usually the way it happens in a community that has subdivision regs, if somebody just comes to their board and says, I want to carve off 10 acres for my cousin here, they go, okay, well, that's what we call a minor subdivision. So just come back to us with the final plat.
Mm-hmm.
Final review, record it, fine.
As long as it meets the minimum acreage. But,
and yeah, but if you now there's a process in place for if you're, say, you want to create 10 lots, mm-hmm. then that's a little different.
Okay, so that is more under this subdivision.
Yeah. So the thing I think that complicates the subdivision of land is that most people don't come to you with a plan for 10 acres, that are 10 lots that they're going to create tomorrow.
Yeah.
They're going to carve out
They're piecemeal.
It's very piecemeal and it's incremental.
And then it morphs into something over time that's not planned.
Right. So then it's really important that your regulations are structured so that you can catch that.
Yeah.
Well, part of that is catching what Act 250 would catch, which is, you know, progressive, you know, mm-hmm. over so many years, so many lots,
mm-hmm. yeah,
within a certain amount of space.
Yeah, and the sensitive areas. You're right. Going to ask, so what are you going to do with the remaining lots? What's going to happen there?
Right.
The other thing is that we still typically regulate by a minimum lot size.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, so you take like 100 acres and you want to create 10 lots and you create 10 acre lots instead of saying, well, you know, you just want to carve out 1 acre here. So if you preserve like 80% of this lot and keep it open for farming, we'll give you 2 more housing lots.
Yeah, that's what we kind of have as a zoning possibility too. But it's more of that kind of an adjustment to kind of get people to plan all at once as opposed to piecemeal, mm-hmm. and then include some carrots about conservation to get it. Even if they maybe aren't going to actually sell all the lots all at once.
And they probably won't.
And they probably won't, because that's usually not a good idea financially. So, but it structures what goes on in the future, and it locks them into some level of conservation in exchange for smaller lots than would normally be under minimum lot size, I assume. Yeah. That's kind of what ours is, because it's I think it lets it go to 1 acre or something if a certain amount of the property is right. left
right.
undone.
There's some of that.
Yeah.
With the understanding that you can't keep going back and yeah. carve into what was originally conserved.
Yeah. So there are some towns, like Sutton got away from a minimum lot size altogether in their rural lands. They call it their working lands overlay. And so they encourage you to create smaller lots and keep the rest open. And so you might want to just check that out. Hinesburg is another community that did something like that. They worked at it for about 5 years to get buy-in.
Wow.
It was a lot because for some reason, like if we would present a plat with, you know, your 100-acre lot divided into 10 acres, and somebody would say, yep, that's what I want to do. But then we said, under this, if you go with the smaller acres, you're going to create 12 lots over here. And then they'd say, but I can't do anything more with this that's left over. That feels like a taking. So it required
for people
a lot
to
of
accept a trade-off.
Yeah. So anyways, just check it out. I know that, you know, subdivision is a thing that we could talk about a lot, too. So.
Okay.
But anyway, if you did want to get to your 1B status for the village, you would, at least for now, you would need subdivision regulations.
Mm-hmm. And the good thing about that is the elimination of certain of the Act 250 requirements. The bad thing is what?
More administrative.
On the DRB, zoning administrator?
Yeah.
I wonder if Dennis has an opinion about that. It would be good to get him in here to see him.
Probably too early for him to have an opinion on that.
Yeah, I wonder, because he does 3 other towns, and I don't know what their story is.
He does Reigate. They don't handle subdivisions. Yeah. What else
Newbury.
Does he? Newbury. Does he do Groton?
Waterford.
Oh, I think, is he doing Waterford now? Or is that somebody else?
I don't know. I thought it was Waterford, but I could be wrong. So, yeah. Anyway, I can check in with him and reach out and see if he does have an opinion on it. Just out of curiosity.
So North Danville is designated, village center as well, but it doesn't have the infrastructure, so it wouldn't be in that.
It would not qualify for tier 1B status.
And that's because of infrastructure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if we were interested, the other thing you would have to look at is, you know, where, I mean, the waste treatment facility, for one, what it can handle, and if everything in the village isn't hooked up.
Right.
I mean, when I was actually, I sort of knew that in the back of my mind, but I was surprised to see the map, wherever it is here, and that shows, I mean, there are places that you would assume were on sewer that are not.
Uh-huh.
And the same thing is happening with, I mean, with water. I mean, the water district isn't necessarily the same outline as what we consider the village center, or the same outline as what the sewage treatment grant.
So then,
services.
You know, it really becomes a matter of, so if you want to promote density in the village, how much density can you actually support?
Right.
Right.
And I guess the key takeaways for me were, you know, if you based it on the current growth projections, we could probably accommodate, I think it was 36
units,
residential units, maybe 72 people. They were assuming, like, you know, 2-point-something people per unit. And that would be within our capacity.
That's with a 50% increase, so we have to then talk about that. Like,
what?
if the wastewater treatment facility was increased by 50%?
No.
It's just, and
that's the current
just
capacity.
As is.
Okay. At the current capacity. But I'm also, I think the changes, the improvements that are needed to the wastewater treatment facility, it's not really changing. It's not changing it to an unlimited capacity. That's what it's just ensuring that it continues to operate in the future.
That's what I was wondering. That's
where it's not about like
when I read
increasing capacity. It's just prolonging its lifespan.
So there are a couple of main things that came.
So
out
before
of that.
We sort of shift into that, are there any other last questions on the subdivision regulations or Act 181 at this point? It sounds like
we're morphing into the
wastewater treatment. So if there's no other questions. Right, okay. Just because I was definitely curious about that, what's going to increase what alternative four is. So
alternative four is just, I think it was chosen because, yes, it's more cost effective and it's actually within our budget.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was alternative three that received some consideration, but the cost was also required constant. Desludging, and considering we haven't desludged our lagoon since 2002, that's an expensive proposition.
Alternative four, do you remember? Was that the one that was one?
Alternative, actually, when you factor in all of the cost of the engineering, it's like $2.24 million. And they had attempted to factor in inflation as well, but they had estimated it to be an implementation date of 2026, and I don't think we're going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've seen of engineering reports like this is that you take that to be a low figure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the main components of alternative four are to cover Lagoon 1, and that makes it more effective in terms of breaking down the waste. I'm not an engineer, so I'm not using the appropriate terminology.
But it's
less dependent on the outside temperatures as they fluctuate throughout the year. The other thing is that the wastewater treatment, because it currently has these two lagoons, in that case, you would also be adding some improvements to the lagoons, but the lagoons would also be operating separately.
So I thought that there was increased capacity with that.
The main thing is if we do nothing, we could be in serious trouble because of the ammonia and phosphorus. Currently, we're okay, but new regulations
are bringing thresholds down.
We're not going to be able to meet those thresholds without improvements. So that's one thing. We probably won't be able to meet future permitting requirements if we do nothing. The other thing is that there's an ultraviolet disinfectant system in that, and it's pretty much at the end of its life.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's got to be replaced. And there are three pump stations. The one near the nursing home, which is really near the storage units.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's in excellent shape, but this pump station on Railroad and at Sugar Ridge need to be replaced. And the other part of this, and they factored in desludging into the cost of the improvements as well, but there would also have to be temporary measures because it's not like you can just take this offline and then go work on it for 3 months.
Right.
So there would have to be temporary piping to be able to handle all of this.
But they thought it would be a 3 month. Or do you know how long?
I can't remember the time frame.
But they can't shut the whole thing down, so they have to have some partial operation, which makes it complicated, I'm sure.
Yeah. And that all is factored in that supposed $2.24 million, even though we're saying that's the low end.
Every time I've gone through like an engineering report like this, by the time you get to implementation, it's always higher. Mm-hmm. And I hate to be a pessimist, but
it's a reality.
Yeah. So, so there's that. The other thing is that there are a couple of financing options for making the improvements to this. The Clean Water State Revolving Fund mm-hmm. has low interest loans. USDA has a combination of loans and grants. However, the grants don't really, the grants kick in on a more complex algorithm on poverty rates, but also, if your cost of improvements are going to increase user rates past a certain threshold. And I think that threshold is like $960-something a year for users. And we are nowhere near that.
Gotcha.
So it doesn't, it's not looking at how much it's increasing, because that's what makes a big difference here, because we're at least doubling.
We're at least doubling, mm-hmm. but their threshold for rate increases is up around 900-something, which is actually what most people are paying, yeah. just like this.
I saw that we were like, what, quarter to a half? But we're pretty significantly less.
So for a single user connection, residential user connection, we currently pay $330, mm-hmm. which is incredibly low. Mm-hmm. I made the mistake of saying in one of the meetings that we hadn't increased our rates in decades, and I think that got onto the letter. And I think Walter was quick to point out that there was an increase, but it was like $15 or something. But it's still nowhere near where we need to be. At the recommendation
to fund, you know, these kind of improvements.
Yeah. So
it was the do nothing.
Do nothing is not a
including remove sludge, which I imagine is really expensive.
$95,000 is what they
because you're not putting that on farmland anymore. I'm pretty sure.
St. Johnsbury used to take it and apply it to land. Obviously, that's not happening anymore because of PFAS.
Yeah.
So
bill probably going to go through.
The other thing is that just because the landfill is there doesn't mean that they'll necessarily right. take it either. Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to play hardball with that stuff. It's going to be really expensive.
So just so that you know, Hardwick is looking at doing a facility that actually incinerates dewatered sludge.
There's so much debate around that in the legislature when I'm over there. And right now we're working with the Ag Committee, and we think there's going to be an Ag bill that will totally prohibit it. And most of the ag members seem to be on to this as long as the farmers will be protected. Because do you guys know what happened in Maine? So in Maine, you probably know.
Yeah, well, they have contaminated farmland. So they're kind of...
The families that have been taken off.
You know, they're out of production because of that.
They've totally prohibited
it. But they're out of production because they applied.
Didn't apply. They bought land. And then this one family in particular tested on their own, and the land, the food, the milk, their baby, their child. So they got off of the land. So Maine Senate passed really good bills. So right now there's one bill that's come up with Rep Maslin, but his bill specifically says we're going to test. But then when you look at the EPA, it's like there's over 700 different chemicals. What are they testing for? Who's testing? Who's paying for it? Mm-hmm. So there's another bill that we've put together. I've actually got it right here. And we're hoping that the Ag Committee is going to cover it. And it specifically is going to make sure that farmers are not held accountable or have to cover costs so they're protected, especially when they've bought in and they haven't applied it. It'll prohibit it. And we're trying to see if A&R can be directed to put together a report for a lined mm-hmm. leachate field. And so that seems, if you had a lined leachate field, because Coventry's full, so much better yep. compared to the incineration where you start to get into
airborne.
Okay. It's exactly. So Hardwick, I did not realize.
They're looking at it.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. And I know there's always been a big sort of sell on
there's
that.
There's not going to be no easy dangerous. Answer, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I think the line leach thing is the best way to go.
It's really interesting because, you know, we've got neighbors in North Danville that had St. J. put that on. And the first area concerned was heavy metals, like yes. 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Should have been a red flag 20 years ago oh, yeah. before they were even thinking about PFAS.
You've got pharmaceuticals experimenting.
And I've got a nuclear physicist brother, and he says, you don't get the level of testing that's coming down the pipe. Mm-hmm. They're so precise at such small concentrations that you know, everything's going to be detectable. And, you know, there's just going to be a lot more data out there about really what's going on.
Oh, yeah. And there already is. This is some – oh, sorry. Go ahead, Judy.
No, I was just going to ask, I know that the water coming out of here is tested for the mm-hmm. nitrates and for the ammonia and for that. Mm-hmm. So is it tested for things like PFAS?
The Department of Environmental Conservation, there just was a presentation in the legislature about that, and they do some testing on that. So they are looking at it in wells, in towns, municipality, mm-hmm. you know, so they are looking at that. But that's where this whole conversation is obviously
that brewing. Goes to, like, the towns like Bennington that had an industry that it did contaminate the water system. So mm-hmm. there must be some.
I don't know about that.
But ongoing testing.
What I'm talking about is the sludge.
Yeah.
And the treated water that's coming off. That's not regularly tested. That's not tested.
Treated water that is coming off is tested
right.
in there. And there are some test results in there. I don't know exactly what level of testing that they would do if they had to, once they have to haul the sludge.
But we do have to.
Yeah. I mean, right. it's getting to an urgent situation because it hasn't happened since 2002.
Well, you must lose physical capacity.
Yes.
And they do try to, a lot of times, like, treat it, so to speak, and then call it good, and they'll lime it. And so there's a lot of stuff. But obviously it's in there, and the EPA has just come out. And the reason I had it on our piece to talk about was because of the sludge removal that has to happen and where does that go, et cetera. So, and you said $95,000.
The desludging alone is $95,000.
And that's not getting rid of it then. That's, like, I don't know if that's included. Does that mean?
That includes, like, taking it out.
Like removal, literal removal into trucks.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Our rates have been so low that, at the beginning of the study period, you know, we had about 152,000 set up in reserves in various accounts. And there was also an account set up for desludging. I think it was about 40,000. I can't remember. Don't quote me on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But usually we collect about 90,000 in fees. Sometimes the fees are late, so we get, like, late fees and, you know. Then after our costs, we're able to put away a little bit of money, like $8,000-$9,000, into these accounts over the years.
So there is some funding?
There is some funding, but it's nowhere near what we need it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, we ran into a deficit. We did not collect enough money to cover our costs.
And just so normal operating costs.
Just normal operating costs.
Put stuff
so
in escrow.
We had to take money out of our accounts to keep it going. So obviously we can't keep doing that.
Yeah.
And so you'll see that in the town report that, you know, we ran out of deficit. So we sent out that bad news letter, which you got a copy too. That we are increasing our rates essentially for, we kind of used the residential connection as a benchmark, but then there were also a whole series of commercial rates that are set for different criteria according to the state. So everybody's rates are ultimately going up 112%. But we're phasing it in over 2 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're collecting quarterly payments instead of every 6 months to try to ease the pain.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was a stopgap measure. And the advice from the engineer from, it was Andrea Day from, that was, she said, aim for 700.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did. But if you look at the financing there and how it affects our user rates, yeah, I think you're ultimately looking at rates of up over $760 a year.
And then you had said for some of the USDA grants, like to even reach those, it would have to be around $900.
Well, we're not going to qualify for grants under USDA.
The loans you were saying.
There would be low interest loans, I think up over 3%, like 3.125% or something. So we'd have to pass a bond.
Mm-hmm.
There is another program, the Northern Border Regional Commission, that sometimes funds sewer infrastructure investments. And I don't think that they have the same criteria for the grants that USDA has. However, then you have a situation, and I did mention this in a public meeting, where a non-sewer user objected to applying for grants because it's basically using their tax dollars to pay for a sewer system. So, I mean, I'm not saying I agree with that, but there is, you know, an objection out there. There is a belief that the sewer users pay for the sewer.
How many people are on the sewer?
We have 160 connections. About 109 of those are residential.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of those are, that does not include multi-units.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, about 160 connections.
And is there any sense right now with the Clean Water State Fund that you said and the USDA loan, and maybe the other ones, of what percentage may be covered, or no sense yet?
No sense yet. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've gotten that deep.
Okay, gotcha. Yep.
But if we were to try to offset some of this with grants, I think the more important thing, and I think the Planning Commission could assist in this, is how important is it to the community to have a center of development that's served by offsite water and sewer? I mean,
I'm just writing your question down.
If this sewer system did not exist, what else in this village would not have?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can talk about, like, use all of the planning speak about how important it is to have a vibrant center of development and a walkable downtown. And, you know, we've got some zero lot line development that, you know, would be hard to support without.
Are all of these places on the sewage?
These
the sewer system
are, yes.
Like town hall and bank and mm-hmm. library and cafe and, you know, mm-hmm. does it have that?
We don't have the actual users, though, on this.
Oh, no, just where the line goes. That's
where the line goes. So what I would like to do, and I think this is, I'm wearing my Regional Planning Commission hat now, just get the E911 addresses.
So actually plot which...
Who is using it?
Yes.
Yeah. And what type of... of right. user, and we've been wanting to get this information for a long time. So the other thing we could do is map where the allocations are.
Because one of the questions that came up in our meeting last time also was if that's, I don't know how much more can be hooked onto the system without expansion. But one of the things we said was, you know, if there's going to be buildings, would they be sort of forced, so to speak, like they would be mandated to hook onto the system if there's even room for that? That was just a question that we had, if there's going to be, you know, this type of...
So that question came up in a previous select board meeting where the person had capacity to do a mound system. And I had asked Keith to check, because Keith is also the person who handles the connections,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I said, would DEC approve a mound system if they knew that you could also connect to the sewer? And I don't know what they, how
right.
they would.
I bet that depends on the circumstances, because right. sometimes they allow a mound system to preserve an existing house or to allow development of a lot,
yeah.
Where it's still not perfect,
yeah.
but it's the best they can do. And if there's an alternative that's better, I don't think they would let them. But if having the mound system is just as good as
connecting,
then I bet they would.
I think it'd be good to know. I can definitely ask them.
I think that's a good question.
But I think it has to be handled on a case-by-case basis.
I think it's case-by-case.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yep.
In that particular scenario, I believe also they were more than 1,000 feet from the road, so there's some sort of regs on where the where the system is located.
Mm-hmm.
But they were also near some wetlands. And so that necessitated a mound system. So I don't know how they would go on that. I really don't. But going back to this, why we have the addresses of the users, and they're E911 addresses, and then we know where we've made allocations. Why couldn't we just map for planning purposes? I think it would be helpful. And we don't have to, I mean, if people are worried about private information, then we probably password protect that information. But I think that's a missing piece of the puzzle.
Like residential business.
Well, Glover, like for example, has more detailed wastewater mapping.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be great if we could get ours there. Mm-hmm. So that's one piece of the puzzle. But then the other part is, again, this goes back to showing how important is the sewer system to supporting a vibrant downtown. And how critical is it? And the other thing that we don't really show is what is the tax base? What is its contribution to the tax base? This area, this service area.
Like with or without it.
With or without it.
So in other words, if the general town beyond just the service area wants to chip in, it may be the same cost. Is not having as much of a grand
exactly.
list.
Exactly. It's kind of answering that question, well, why do my tax dollars have to pay for this?
And part of it is because you've goosed your grand list by having, you know, more
at the very least
properties in the village centers.
At the very least, if we were going to pursue grants to try to offset some of the cost of the debt load, I think it would be important to show what the tax impact is on our village core. I think it might help justify it. Would make a grant application stronger too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it could also help coalesce public opinion around investing in this. So it's just something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So just to summarize the number, so we have approximately 160 connections currently, 109 are residential, and you mentioned earlier growth projection of potentially 36 units, 72 people.
They used the growth in the census designated place, which is the closest measurement area that we have to the sewer service area, and that went from, I can't remember, 3-something to, it's right there, thank you, right now it's at 416, it could go as high as 408, and they felt that, but that's what, like a 1% increase a year.
Right, that's what they're looking at when they're projecting growth. Because there's sort of two questions, the projection of growth, but that ties into the capacity of the sewer system. So what they're saying is that it looks like we can handle things through for 20 years. The next 20 years, we're probably okay if things grow at the same rate.
But they never do. But they never do. Your projections are not just a reflection of what's happened in the past. The other thing is if you are amending your zoning bylaws to achieve greater density, which all communities are being encouraged to do, what does that do to your numbers as well?
Right.
Exactly. And which is why I was sort of surprised when I saw this, that there's no proposal to expand the capacity of the
sewers. That shocked me as well.
Mm-hmm. Is that, unit, whatever.
Was that in some of the alternatives? Like, have you guys had that conversation? Because already, obviously, 2.24 million is a ton.
I don't think it was ever really focused on expanding it. I think you would have to actually build.
Build new, you mean?
New.
Right.
Because it drains to such a small water body.
Yeah, I thought that was a limiting factor, is the ability to discharge.
I mean, because it discharges onto the water. Right?
Yeah, which is a tiny little brook at that point.
Yeah.
So what this tells me is that, or what I see from all this, is that there may be some infilling that makes sense where the lines exist, but there's really no sense in allowing anybody to extend the line or develop like that, you know, off of that big lot off of Route 2, which was, you know, that was proposed at one point for
down near Marty's.
Down near Marty's.
Yeah.
They would have to do their own septic systems.
Yeah.
Even if it's done in a, you know, cluster manner.
So really no expansion happening, like you're saying, like they're filling it in, depending.
Yeah. So if somebody's going from a one family to a two family, or they're adding an in-law, or their little cottage out back, or, you know, all those things that they talk about with the infilling, that's probably about all we can handle.
Right. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, like you said, like independent systems.
Unless there's certain areas that lend themselves to on site, that should be encouraged.
But the other thing is that usage limits are often based on things like number of people per bedrooms and actually or per unit, and our actual occupancies might be lower.
Well,
and we don't really have those numbers.
Well, and that, there's something weird about this, because it was talking about the units per category and, you know, and connections per category. And
the actual connections and why they're different?
Yes. And it also, it seems like an apartment. Well, I guess I didn't understand what they're talking about. But it doesn't seem that they're I don't know. It doesn't tell us what the actual usage is.
The only usage estimates that I could get out of this was an average of 70 gallons per capita day. And that's how they base their estimates for what their capacity was in the future.
Per person.
Per capita.
Mm-hmm. Per capita meaning person within household?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So,
all right. I'm sorry, I got lost.
No.
They are really important questions.
It's hard to, you know, estimate, it seems like. It can be variable.
I mean, we don't have unlimited capacity for increasing density, right?
That's the bottom line.
That is the bottom line. On the other hand, I think we just need to do more exploration to find out what it really is. I think we're also at a disadvantage because none of the users have meters.
Well, that's what I was thinking too. So you really,
right.
And it comes up because I, you know, I didn't read the whole report, but I glossed over it, and they have spikes that they can't attribute to anything, but they're already
PODs,
they're blaming it on, you know, commercial users, which is probably right, because if somebody has to do some monster cleaning, you know, that's maybe easier to pin on commercial than, you know, residential people may not have the same variability.
But we have no idea.
We have people, typical communities, they meter the water that you buy, and that's typically directly related.
They don't meter the sewage.
How do sewage?
Well, same way.
Right? It's not a job I want.
Well, you actually you can. It's just based on water flows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So typically it's done. You're right. Your sewer rates in most developments are based on literally on your meter read of your usage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously we have spring flooding and stuff like that around here, people drain the basements, etc.
Right.
But so when you say there's no metering, do we have people on the system that aren't on metered water?
Our water isn't metered.
The water is not metered. But the question is, there may be some houses in town that use the wastewater treatment plant but have a well.
Right.
Yeah. There also may be people who are on the roof.
There are meters on the water. I don't know if there's a bunch grandfathered in beforehand, but I mean,
somebody's got meters.
If you get as far down as like the Baker house, I think they're not on sewer, but I think they're on water.
Yeah, so I'm sure you're going to see.
So the water lines right. go further.
Right. So I think this is helpful with regards to just our work from a planning commission.
Well, I think it just raises more questions.
It raises more questions, but also just with sort of that bottom line of right now, we're not looking at any expansion on that. Mm-hmm. So just with regards to planning in that regard, like, you know, again, it would be just, you know, independent systems, mound systems, whatever.
Expanding the capacity of the existing system is out of our reach financially.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah that's what I'm obviously.
So wouldn't it follow then you might try and identify sites in these village cores that would lend themselves to, you know, communal septic systems in ground things, you know, certain soil types and stuff. So you could automatically consider something like that, knowing that certain areas
this would be the plan
would be off, never connected, would have its own system.
To do more of like a soil study.
Yeah, you'd have to find the right soil veins and stuff like that.
I don't know how good the existing soils data is. I've heard so many comments from people that it's not very reliable.
That you really don't know until you start digging.
Exactly. Once you have a plan.
But it seems like maybe that's going to be part of the future. Say that place down Route 2 had gone in. I mean, it got kind of booted because of traffic patterns and nothing. It wasn't really thought out that well. But, you know, you could make a good argument that if they had a good site for in-place communal sewage, that would be, you know, a perfect thing.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever thought about doing like a build-out analysis?
Well, did you send information at one point, and I was hoping to visit, go through that this year, like about like shires? There was sort of, I think maybe something you had sent about like a creating shires or sort of the housing communities. Maybe it wasn't you that sent me that link. I thought it was you. Okay, I apologize. But go ahead.
But just do it like a targeted build-out analysis of the village core.
Where?
What do you mean? Where it could be?
What can actually handle greater densities and what can't?
Mm-hmm.
And then what the actual barriers to those densities might be, in like soil capacity.
I think that's sort of beyond our expertise.
No. You'd have to hire somebody to do it. I mean,
but it seems like
way beyond mine.
Yeah, yeah. But it seems like that's where you got to go if you're going to consider infill and you've got, you know, restrictions on a sewer.
The other option is we designate where it can, you know, where it's allowed by zoning, and then they've got to jump through the hoop of finding out whether they connect, whether mm-hmm. they can't connect, whether they can get a well, whether they can put in their own septic.
Mm-hmm.
That's up to them.
That's all their homework.
Yeah,
that's their job.
Yeah.
You know, we can only warn them that, you know, that
those are issues that need to be part of your application.
So in other words, and again, it goes back to the premise that your regulations simply don't create a needless barrier if you can go denser.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then the rest of it is on you. Well, that's probably the cheaper way to go rather than...
Oh, yeah. I would imagine.
But I would love to have
Well, sure. It would be fascinating. But, you know...
A big deal.
Are we going to get the funding for that?
Yeah. Right. Well, maybe through municipal planning grants. I don't know.
Right.
Hmm.
Okay. So, no, this is so helpful, definitely. Obviously, everyone's asking questions. I don't know if you guys think you have any more for Allison on the wastewater piece.
No, it's going to be obviously an ongoing
discussion. And was the agreement made then? It sounds like you guys have decided on alternative 4, or do you think there's going to be more of a conversation?
I think there, I mean, nobody made a motion or anything. Mm-hmm. We just did that, and
you just let it sink in.
It just had to let it sink in and look at the numbers and go, oh,
oh right. Really? Oh, awesome.
But that's where sort of most of you were the conversation setting catch that was leaning.
We would go with their recommendation for, you know, like the preferred alternative mm-hmm. for, and I don't think that anybody was. First of all, like alternative one was to do nothing, and that was kind of automatically taken off the table.
Right.
And then there was an anaerobic reactor, and that was kind of ruled out, and they didn't take that any further. So it was really just an analysis of these two and the cost of maintaining alternative number three was pretty scary.
That was the UV.
No, that was the, what is it, sequential batch?
Okay.
I don't know what it means either, and I have to constantly refer to that report.
You have to keep going back to what the definitions are.
And there are several there are several terms that have acronyms, and then I have to keep looking them up because I don't.
Because you're not an engineer.
I'm not an engineer.
It's not at the tip of your tongue.
Right.
It's at the tippy of Andrea Day's tongue.
Yeah. And David, I'm sure David. I'm surprised he wasn't able to make
it to a sequencing batch reactor.
Sequencing batch reactor.
Okay. Sounds technical. Sketchy. Sounds technical.
But it was ongoing desludging was the part that tripped me out there.
That was that one. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Good
no.
call.
Right. Every week, every 2 weeks, somebody has to.
Oh, gosh. Right.
All
right.
The way, yeah.
Okay. That was
we can all understand, cover the lagoon, keep it warm, and it'll work better.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems pretty simple.
It does.
Keep
it
the
does.
Biological
activity. I mean,
there's
other things going on here.
The warmth.
Yeah. Okay. So
all right.
That's
well,
good.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think
ongoing. It's obviously complicated, more so than.
Right. But something needs
thoughts.
To happen, obviously.
Yeah.
Jumped in on this. But I've talked to some of our folks, our coworkers, again, wearing my NVDA hat. I would love to do some better wastewater mapping.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be helpful.
Yes.
Yeah. It looks like the minimalist is what's going on right now. Just basic. This is where the lines are, and we don't know how much is going in and from who.
But the sludge
and not everybody's
go.
Hooked up. And
I mean, from a taxpayer standpoint, if you don't mind me asking, I forget, maybe you recall for the select board, there was money moved into a fund. Is that applicable? Is there any sort of town money to be put towards any of that?
No, and I think taxpayers want us to keep those separate. So that's why the funds that are set up for reinvestment in the wastewater system have been funded by user fees.
Yeah. And you had said that was the one that was depleted because you weren't charging enough.
It's not depleted. We had to take money.
It's just
money.
A
that's
deficit.
It was,
it's going the wrong
this
direction.
This year it went in the wrong direction, and we can't, have that happening.
Yeah, that's a bad
thing. So, we didn't run out of money, and we didn't
move money
from the general fund.
You're faced with, doubling user fees or more than double, and that's always a shock.
But you've already made that step at least.
We did, and I was surprised that we didn't get more blowback.
They probably realize when you compare to other towns.
Well, and it's been a bargain, I think. And there's no alternative.
It's an understatement.
Right.
Is the negative operations, was that flooding related at all, or is that forecasted to be the future reality?
Oh, it's just the reality. It's the maintenance.
It's like this pump, this fitting, this, that.
We did have the weir that got covered with debris.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? That could happen again. I also, the report says that it happened in July of 2023. I'm not convinced.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't discovered until January, and I don't think that's because nobody paid attention. We had that.
Eyes would have been open on that.
We had that rain on snow event, like less than a week before Christmas, and we had all that flooding.
In 23.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's when it happened.
Yeah, probably.
But
it was a mess.
It was a mess. And
pouring rain.
I just can't help but think that that's maybe when it happened. Mm-hmm. This report does recommend maintaining the weir more often and dredging it regularly. So, Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's, in other words, it's not a single incident. Mm-hmm. I just think it's just the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
But when you also look at how much other communities pay for their wastewater, mm-hmm. I mean, we're at about half of what they pay.
Yeah. But also, they may have better systems and in better shape. I mean, they may be more evolved in how they're handling it.
We actually don't have a bad system. It works pretty well, even though it's small.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
It needs work going forward.
It needs work going forward. You know, it has had some work over the years. There were some dispersers put into the lagoons. The pumping station on Route 2 was replaced.
And so what about the scrubbing piece? I know you mentioned last time they had to scrub it, and then that stirred up some bacteria so that it was treated.
Oh, you're talking about water. That's the water, not the soap.
No, of course. It just made me think about the, does that scrubbing have to happen often there? Like in comparison, do we know?
I don't know how often.
Because I think
that's a totally different system.
You're talking about the water?
Yeah, no, the woman, it just reminded me, I'm sorry, the woman who I think looks at it and maintains
Janice.
She lives down the road from you, I think you said, and you were going to ask her just about, one, if there was chlorine that's regularly added. It sounded like you said no.
No, there is not.
Okay. And normally then two, the scrubbing, I was just curious, just in thinking of the sludge and sludge removal and how much that happens, it made me think
about. No, they don't, it's not done very often.
Okay. It doesn't have to be.
Okay,
good.
They always test, actually, I mean, the last yearly report, of course, was for 2023 because mm-hmm. they haven't done 2024.
Yeah.
I mean, everything... The possible things, the things that they have to test for. There's never been an E. coli.
Awesome.
There's nothing like that. Radium is mm-hmm. a tiny bit of radium, but.
That's in Vermont.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's the erosion of natural deposits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the level at which you have some concern is 5, whatever they are. Don't ask me what they are.
That's the upper limit.
It's 5, and like the combined is 0.7.
Okay.
0.7.
Okay, gotcha.
What's the hardness of?
Oh, that I don't have that right here.
I don't have that.
And there's also, I mean, they do lead, copper. It's also, you know, mm-hmm. very.
Yeah, maybe we can get into that some more too. I don't want to hold you up, Alex, because I was just curious as we're talking.
So the water quality is very good.
Right.
The other thing is, I mean, they've never had a problem with supply.
Mm-hmm.
Tim says they're not worried about, you know, basically unless somebody were to come in and propose opening up a water bottling.
Or a water park.
Off of Hill Street Park. They'll open it up off of Hill Street Park.
There's a lot of capacity.
There's capacity for everything within the district.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The one thing I didn't do was... I forgot to ask precisely what the district is
mm-hmm.
because as you look, when you look at that,
they don't,
it's not,
that.
They don't know
yeah.
right. not exactly.
Like, so that's task number two.
That's another good question.
Yeah. I would love to have a better map.
Yeah. I don't know if there is any map.
Do we know how many people are on water at all?
It's usually in the report.
It's probably right in here somewhere.
It's on that first page, isn't it?
No, violations during year 0.
No.
It's not there. This is all just general. It's a 300-foot deep well, 200 gallons per minute.
Nice.
That's all.
I was just so impressed that it's not chlorinated. It just makes me so happy to hear that.
Oh, no, it's the best water in the world.
That's what you're saying.
It's great.
Yeah,
I've always... Awesome. As a matter of fact, when
I don't think we're facing water shortages.
No, we don't.
Anytime soon. We're going the other direction.
I didn't see
where water table is going up.
But yeah, no, I want to look at that. I'll try to dig into that. And I don't know if Janice knows. I just would be curious in relation to talking about the wastewater.
Well, I'll talk to Tim. I mean, Janice is the one who goes and does
the report
weekly and monthly testing
and reports
and that sort of thing. But Tim, I think, has more general knowledge. So, because I actually, after the last time I talked to him, I should have talked to him since then, but I went online because I said, oh, he said, were fine within the district. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. I assumed there would be like a map online on the website or something of where the district is.
Right.
I said, well, no, there isn't. Because first off, they're not part of the town. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's technically
it's a separate fire district.
Okay.
And there's...
there has been some talk about, at the last fire district meeting that I went to, of making it a town function.
Well, it's a little odd that it's different, but on the other hand, you know, it's worked so far.
Mm-hmm. That's actually, it's a very typical arrangement for small towns
to have it separate.
To have it separate, but, you know, as things become more complex and, you know, day-to-day operations to rely on largely volunteers gets harder and harder.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is that's one of the primary topics that might be in the crosshairs of the Danville Services Committee, which they're standing out.
Yeah,
so this whole area is going to be act.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump on there. Are you going to jump on there, Greg?
I have submitted an interest.
Awesome.
You know, they haven't identified their committee yet.
Yeah, it looks like it's just coming together. So that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Okay, good. Anything else that you wanted to add in that we haven't asked? Or
I just hope I haven't confused you more because I went down many rabbit holes.
It's awesome. It's what we wanted and what we wanted to hear because it came up a lot in our past conversations. So
February 11th, and I will, I'm not going to do it tonight, but I will follow up with a reminder on, and also just give you like a 2-page summary on the Act 181, and as well, and you probably have the ACCD language that goes into it.
I can even share the sort of Act summary from the legislative websites, unless you have something.
That's
to
the
share.
Same one that they use in the ACCD.
Yeah, so I can just share.
But we've got like a 2-pager in terms of like what we need to be doing.
Yep. Okay. Okay. Do you want to share that? Is that what you're saying then?
I'll follow up with that.
Perfect.
You know, the main thing for the future land use mapping is we want to do this with the towns.
Mm-hmm. Thank
you. Not to them.
That's huge.
There is obviously, I mean, even though we are on a very tight timeline, we're going to have to go out and meet with everybody.
Right.
So.
And out of curiosity, the Land Use Review Board, the new one that was just established through Act 181, and they just assigned, are the regional planning commissions, are you guys going to be also keeping a close eye and watching all of that? Do you have a plan in place?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, we know Kirsten pretty well.
I
know Janet Hurley.
And I know. Yeah, Jingle Gun is awesome.
Yeah. I also know Alex Weinhagen.
Good.
And
so you'll be able to be in touch.
Yeah.
So as they get to, I'm just thinking of the Northeast Kingdom Danville Critical Resource Area conversation is going to be a big one.
So that and just the general overall collaboration between all of the regions and also, you know, Janet has been in some of those conversations and I think that's going to help us a lot. It looks like NBDA is going up first.
Okay. And will you, what is the best way for us to know as that moves forward? Because of you guys will reach out because you're looking for community feedback anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll just keep our eyes open for that.
Yeah. But yeah, we've got 2, now 3 GIS people working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got another team that's just working on outreach, and then we come together every week and share results. It just, the process seems to generate more questions than answers.
And the subdivided regulation piece, it sounds like there is some conversation on if that's going to exist or not, so it doesn't sound like it's worth putting time and energy into.
What I say to towns that are looking to do subdivision regs is, what do you want to achieve with it?
Mm-hmm.
I have been approached by some communities, one community that wanted a permanent Act 250 exemption for a specific development.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just did a search online. They got the simplest subdivision regs they found.
and they chose it on a number of page count because they figured that would be the best.
Right, that's awesome.
And I said, well, what do you want to achieve on this? I mean, your town plan talks a lot about rural character and preserving rural resources and forest cover. I mean, how is this? And the regulation said something like the site layout will attempt to minimize fragmentation.
Attempt.
That's what they took.
And I said, no, this is what this, these are exact, these are actual regulations that were adopted by another town. And I said, what constitutes an attempt? And I mean, if you brought this before your DRB, what would, how would the DRB define an attempt?
Right.
So, I mean, the bottom line is, are you doing this to further the goals in your town plan, or are you doing this to check a box? That, so.
But did they get their Act 250 exemption?
They didn't. They're still debating
if they're going to go on that.
If they want to adopt subdivision regs. There are really good reasons for adopting subdivision regs. But
really
I think.
Good reasons for Act 250.
Yeah, but I mean, there's got to be some happy medium
in there.
I mean,
we'll see if this achieves that. If one actually does,
yeah.
Once it comes through, so good. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time. That's awesome. I really appreciate it.
Is this your question on the, it's a 5-year on the tank cleaning and the coordination?
No.
Mm-hmm. So you can forecast that out. That was a warning.
That we were just talking about. Yeah, exactly. Because that's what Judy was filling us in on last time. So you have your stuff.
Oh, the town where I used to, where I grew up.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you.
Had to chlorinate their water. And every time I take a shower at my parents' house, it smells like a swimming pool.
Oh, yeah. You just, and then it turns to like the gas and you get it that way.
St. Jay's
exactly.
Like that.
Isn't that interesting?
I know.
I didn't get sick.
Allison, thank you so much. Definitely.
Oh, no.
And just please keep us posted.
If you guys have more questions about this,
I'm sure as we sort of move through, we will definitely, yeah. And just keep us posted needs and how we can help support
you.
Bob mentioned a few things, so we'll see what we can do.
Okay.
All
right, good. Thanks so much. Have a good one.
You too.
Was this yours or Judy's?
No, that's Judy's.
Right.
Okay,
well, they do send this out.
That's mailed?
That's mailed out.
Thanks for all your work.
Yeah.
Bye. Take care.
I mean, I printed this out, but I get one every year. I remember getting, at least I... remember getting them.
So thank you guys. Thank you guys for obviously jumping in and all the good questions. I think it helps to understand and just get a sense of what they're doing. I thought that there was going to be expansion, so that was a big shock for me to hear that is really just like
gotta learn about this. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I know it's been on our list, so that was good. Did you have something, Greg?
Oh no. Metering is actually a requirement for, but I don't know when it started, you know, and how many, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
A requirement for?
They're not red, but the meters are on the water.
You mean that the fire district now requires them when you're adding?
The fire district, the one that does.
Fire district does water.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the Sugar Ridge development, which again is a turn of the century, but they're all metered.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
All right.
I didn't realize that.
And again, it's known that they're not being read, but they're sitting there clicking away. So because
they're measuring something.
Because the other interesting thing in this whole wastewater sort of thing is again, you know, many developed communities charge on what's coming in under the assumption that that's
just
what's
going
out.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you would have to put in an exemption saying, hey, I'm filling a swimming pool.
Right.
I don't want to pay sewer for, you know. So.
Yep.
But again, I don't know.
Well, that's the disconnect that you brought up. If some people, you know, get the water, some people don't, et cetera. So,
yeah.
So again, that's one of the things I'm interested in, the services. I mean, I would assume, you know.
Yeah. No, I think that'll be good. I'm glad that they're choosing to do that. Okay. So good. So thank you guys on that. Any last comments or questions or you guys wanted to add on what Allison was going through? Okay, so then the last piece, the Planning Commission elections, obviously we need to do that, and we need to look at chair, vice chair, secretary, and I need to check in with Kate. I kind of held off, so I'll try to check the status and see where she's at and mm-hmm. talk to Audrey. And then I'm hoping to try to do that for February, if that makes sense for mm-hmm. everybody. Okay. And then, Greg, are you thinking you're a definite for jumping?
I'm a definite available resource. Mm-hmm. And again, if I had to campaign for this, I don't have any I have a lot of facility management.
We would be so grateful but, to have you.
Just be aware that
I see Audrey's posting for, trying to get civic involvement.
I know. We would be so grateful for you to jump in and be part of the conversation.
Yeah. And that goes back to the services, mm-hmm. the tools that we use to communicate to the community. I do have space in that, mm-hmm. It's so newsletters and websites and stuff like that. So
that's awesome.
And even the tools that we use within the planning commission is very formal, mm-hmm. right? It's coming right off the select board, mm-hmm. the meeting minutes and the agendas and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But a lot of the other committees and commissions that the town relies on are, kind of in decline you can go back 10 years and you look at meeting minutes and just society was a little more
connected and involved.
A little more formal and it's, yep. So,
right.
I am available if you guys need me. I have a distinct interest.
I will say right now, we absolutely need you. We would be so happy if you would be willing and able. And you can either get back to us or let us know now.
I'm pretty good about showing up. I definitely have an interest, et cetera, et cetera. So, I would request from you guys to find a niche where you might have a need and let mm-hmm. me start studying on something, mm-hmm. Kind of shoulder something that I'm not going to break.
Oh, yeah. No, and that's what right now we're just sort of getting mm-hmm. going for the year and what do we want to focus on. And exactly.
One value that I will submit is that, the broader picture, I do go to select board meetings. I do go to a number of different things. I'm very excited about this services committee.
Me too.
And I think they're doing a one-year thing. Need in that is so broad that I would hope that they would select a few things this year and then select a few. As a liaison, I'd be willing to provide limited notes or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
As relevant.
And just catching us up, et cetera. No, that would be great.
Right. But if I under-deliver, you guys need to kick me off.
It would be wonderful, definitely. Right. And so I think next meeting we can go through all those pieces and mm-hmm. do the elections and all of that, if that sounds mm-hmm. good to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
One quick question. Usually when I run into a 7:30 meeting for municipal, for Danville in particular, usually has a history of farming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any issues with the 7:30 time. I'm just interested as to why it's as late as it is compared to most meetings.
Right. That's a good question. I came into it on that.
It's always,
I have kids in work and all of that, so it works for me, but I'm definitely open to that conversation.
No issues. I just,
I'll just make a note of it for the agenda.
Well, it's hard for me.
Okay.
I work all the time.
Right.
All the time.
Right.
I have, no help.
Right, gotcha.
And, I got to do night chores, and then I'm slamming down something to eat.
So why don't we have this conversation?
Yeah.
7:30 is best.
I still try and get going a little bit early just to.
Yeah.
But I also understand I have a little saying about a 7:30 meeting. You really don't want to be late to a 7:30 meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's, at that point, it's kind of rude because it's a 7:30 meeting.
Exactly. But I will definitely add that.
It's like you don't show up, 8 o'clock.
We can have a conversation on it.
Again, it sounds like it meets a very valid
member.
But, I'm just one person and other people have, small kids or whatever is different.
It caught my eye.
Yeah.
Right. We have our farmer's market during the day because the person used to run the farmer's market had chores, mm-hmm. Or do you think that would be an evening thing? So anytime I see a 7 or 7 later in Danville, it's farmer.
Yeah. And that I think probably is where I came from. So that's good. And then the only other last thing I had on the update was just the sewage sludge piece, especially just from your opinion. I'm hoping that something is going to pass. I really feel confident that it will pass on a state level. And just thinking about the sludge that they're removing and what goes on. I just didn't know if it doesn't pass for some reason, would you guys ever want to have a conversation around?
So they can still land apply it even at this point?
Yes. Really? Yeah.
And that's Reynolds still spreading?
Well, I mean, that's all contractual, so I don't know where that's at.
And I don't know if it's sludge versus just biosolids. Was it sludge specifically?
Well, it may be biosolids. Now that I think about it, I mean, I guess there is a difference.
There is a difference.
It's all posted along the old North Church route, so I just didn't.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, I guess there is a difference, but I'm not totally. But
I thought the proposal is about sludge from waste.
The sludge specifically.
As opposed to
biosolids.
As opposed to
manure.
Manure out of the barn.
Yeah.
No, I thought biosolids isn't a municipal.
Biosolids is like a bigger, broader, broader term. And then sludge and septage is what we would be talking about, like what comes out of sewers and septic systems.
But you're right, because they did sell biosolids.
They dehydrate them and sell
they
them.
They dehydrate that. Casella. So it must not be totally sludge. There must be a different.
There's just
component.
A different process of treating and dehydrating, which doesn't
because they
to
were
be.
Mixing it with ash, and they did call it biosolids.
Yes, and they called it organic.
That must just be sludge.
Yes, it's treated sludge.
But
it
they pelletize it so it can spread. And I mean, you know, I got a, I'm starting to get a strong vision of where this is all going.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're 50, 60 years into ag chemicals, and they're showing up in North Danville well water.
Okay, gotcha.
I mean, not
like nitrates,
not just springs.
Mm-hmm.
We're
wells,
talking drilled
deep in
wells.
The wells. Wow.
So when you got atrazine in your deep well, and so my feeling on this is what's going to happen in the future with farms as they sell.
Mm-hmm.
Is there's going to be that's going to affect valuation
if they're going to test?
Well, they have to divulge tests,
right?
So if you know you have
to tell
contaminated,
that. Right?
Pesticides in your or nitrates, whatever,
right?
Or kind of just like coliforms or lead.
Greg, did you have a comment?
Oh, I was just going to say this is all top of the headline news.
I know
this legislative section that. They're stating that they have no intention of opening any more landfills after Coventry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how or what they're going to do that, right? You know,
I know.
They're making the final push to take wastewater away from farmers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wastewater is going to be regulated completely outside of farmers' control, et cetera. And so it's all
it's all out there.
It's all out there.
But it really is going to just from a farm. Valuation going forward is going to be huge.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Because, quite honestly, it's not so much the public sector that's going to weigh in on it. It's going to be the private sector and private valuations.
Exactly. And because, the reason
because
I just
banks will
about,
be right there.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to want to stand behind loans to contaminated properties.
Right.
And as this stuff gets documented and it comes through in sales because you have to divulge.
And Maine just created a fund. The Senate created a fund.
It's not
going to
be pretty for these guys. And, you know, it's kind of like unintended consequences.
Exactly.
Does it impact your land conservation options, et cetera?
Because it could affect that kind of stuff going forward. Once they know they had contaminated property, they're probably like, we don't really want to deal with that.
Can I ask you a dumb question? Because I don't know. I mean, do farmers in North Danville, for example, use as much chemicals as you might find, you know,
well, if they're growing the corn.
If they're growing corn, they're using a lot of herbicides.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
That's automatic. Unless it's organic. Like
and typically
did,
glyphosate.
Nobody does that. So anybody growing corn is Roundup a lot.
Glyphosate.
And they just don't use Roundup anymore because Roundup's losing effectiveness because stuff is getting resistant. So now they're going back to more legacy mixes. And I have a neighbor who's in on this, who's, you know, kind of, he's not going to litigate it, but he's following it because his well's polluted from the neighbor.
Wow.
And there's nothing illegal. There's no legal remedy. What has happened with big farms that are getting into this is they get sued and then they have to maybe provide drinking water to the people who need it. But it's nothing illegal.
That's all right
to farm.
They're doing what they're
but
doing.
But I don't think anybody's happy about it. I'm sure the state is like, really?
We're and it's a mess right with... now in the legislature. We're trying to figure it out because I go there every week and keep an eye on certain things. But the reason I was asking was if they don't do it on a state level, I didn't know what you guys thought about trying to see about doing it on a town level to stop anyone from doing the sludge because of the contamination into the water, because of the contamination into the fields, because of the liability to them in the future. That's what I don't know. This is why I'm bringing it up.
It's a little, I mean,
I'm hoping the state's going to deal with it properly and do it right. That would be ideal.
Or the select board.
I don't know if we're still on record, but if there's one community where you're good at, where that's going to be a tough sell.
Mm-hmm. I mean, surprised if the private sector drives this result more than the public sector.
But
because that happens a lot in farming where it's, you know, you don't want to, it's the sacred cow thing. You don't want a lot of regulations. But what happens is, it's when turnover of property.
Exactly.
Then lack of insurability, mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff. That's what starts driving this
but
stuff.
But Rep Nelson, who's new, and he's on the Ag Committee, and he has like 4,000 acres of corn and 2,000 cows and all of those pieces. And he is looking at this bill right now. And as long as it's protecting the farmers, you know, so trying to make sure the farmers are not held liable for this.
Is Henry Pearl still out there?
Henry Pearl didn't run again, but Greg Burt, who's a dear friend, he is also on the Ag Committee. So we've been working with them to try to get a committee bill to try to do it properly. And I just brought it up because, one, I was curious where you landed on it, of course. And two, just is there something the town could do if the state doesn't do it? So I'll revisit that once we see what happens. And I just was trying to get a sense.
Because I'm a long-range guy, so I'm not just thinking what's going to happen in a few years.
Right.
But I can see, because this is, so if you have atrazine in a drilled well, I mean, even if they stop using it tomorrow, mm-hmm. that's going
to
be there
50 years to get there.
20, 30 years.
Right.
So, see, that's going to show up as land transfers.
Sitting there longer.
And who wants to buy it?
And who's going to buy, even though it's a beautiful farm, whatever, but if it's got contamination issues, it's going to have valuation repercussions. But the flip side is farms that are not contaminated are going to have valuation considerations on the upside.
Right.
So, I mean, to me, that's kind of interesting because it's an unintended consequence mm-hmm. of kind of, you know, pretty much unregulated ag chemical
exactly.
use. I mean, they didn't know
and we're
where they were going. I mean, they started with dioxin stuff.
I know.
You know?
Right.
And then they eased up on that. And the Roundup stuff has been the least, you know, it's the most denatured type stuff.
But still,
it's losing effectiveness. So, but the interesting thing is there's right to farm laws. But if you press, because nobody really sprays themselves, they all use Northeast Ag. So they're using certified sprayers. If you complain, they have to divulge what they spread out.
Oh, yeah.
So there's some regulations.
Some. Right, there is some.
So if you press the issue, you've got contamination.
We don't need to go there anymore,
but
too. I think so appreciate it.
It's
guys,
just really interesting.
But we're all good. Are we good? We're like wrapping up.
I just think it's interesting what's going to happen in the future in terms of transparency.
On this, exactly. I'm going to adjourn right now for us at 9:13, closing up. Thank you, guys.
All right, thank you.
End of meeting.
February 27th.
Thank you, JB. Yes.
All right. Is utility.